of load shedding at Eskom becomes something we have to digest and consume in so many different ways as people, right? The ways in which this affects our life and looking to move on, looking to move forward. I think, just simply put, we want a prognosis. We want to know what the current situation looks like really and where it's likely to go. So to help us understand some of this in a broad sense this afternoon, onto the show, I've invited somebody who's been a fantastic analyst when it comes to these kinds of things, a consultant, an electrical engineer, a public speaker, writer, and MD at EE Business Intelligence. Chris Yellen joins me now on 5Drive. Chris, welcome to the show. Thanks for making a bit of time for me.
It's a great pleasure, and good afternoon to you and your listeners.
Chris, so, I mean, I want to try to be, you know, as layman's terms about all of these kind of things as possible, because I just feel like myself and a lot of my listeners, we're kind of getting to the point where it just seems like it's just not easy to easily digest what's going on. So, you know, if we look at what's going on with Eskom at the moment, we're hearing that the energy availability factor is decreasing. We know that we've got old plants and we're supposed to be phasing them out. They're getting weaker. We know we've got new plants, and the procurement process, among other factors, is stalling the process of them taking over. Before we get to changes that have come as a result of COP26 now, I mean, I guess what I just want to know is, you know, where does this all end up? What kind of a trajectory are we on?
The situation is dire. We are facing in South Africa a serious energy crisis. We know that because we experience regular load shedding. That seems to be getting worse. In fact, it is getting worse. Last year was a record year, and this year we've already exceeded the record of last year. So things are getting worse, and they're likely to even get worse further before they get better. But I don't want to sound all doom and gloom. If we do the right things and take the hard choices that are in front of us, we can get over this. But I think we have to realize there is no quick fix. It took a long time to get to this problem, to get to where we are in this problem, and it's going to take a lot of effort and time to get it right. So any people who think there's a quick fix and you need to just fire the CEO and the COO and replace them with somebody else and then all your problems go away, that's living in cloud cuckoo land. We need to work on this problem and solve the systemic problems that are there in the industry and the structure of the industry. We need to start building new generation capacity fast and lots of it. Because not only do we need to replace this old plant, we need to build up what is called a generation capacity reserve margin that will give us sufficient space to be able to shut down these generation plants, these older ones, and do the maintenance properly. At the moment, if you want to do maintenance and you shut down a generator, you increase load shedding. You don't decrease it, because there is no generation capacity reserve margin. There is no buffer that enables you to carry on operating while you are doing this maintenance. So when you do the maintenance, you have to push yourself into further load shedding. That's where we are at the moment. So we need to replace the old plant with new plant that performs like new plant. And we need to build sufficient generation capacity reserve margin so that one can do a maintenance effectively and not be in this terrible situation that we're in at the moment.
And we're all incredibly optimistic. I think, you know, South Africans have that in our nature, and it's something that we do encourage massively on the show. But, I mean, it sounds like there's an element of what you're saying, especially given the fact that some of these problems, as you say, are systemic. There's also, you know, procurement processes, among other things, that have hurt where we are now, in addition to just needing a different plan and a different process. Simply put then, I mean, what are we realistically looking at? The system has to give, it has to break, and then a couple years until we've built something new up? You know what I mean? It's just in terms of being practical and honest about the situation we're in.
We do need to be realistic. There's no room for sunshineism where we live in a world of rose-tinted glasses. And there's also no room for being overly pessimistic. We need to be realistic and understand exactly where we are. And we need to understand what produces results and what doesn't. There's an enormous temptation and pressure, especially from politicians who've been sitting on their hands for a long time with dysfunctional policies and regulatory environments. And suddenly you say, the solution is fire the CEO. Of course, that doesn't solve the problem tomorrow. It actually worsens the problem, because you will then have an organization in crisis that doesn't have leadership. to replace the leadership is not done by the board, it's done by the minister. There's a public process that has to take place in the appointment of a new CEO or COO, and it typically takes 6 months. And this is the last thing we need now is a failing organization without leadership for the next 6 months. What we need to do is understand what is causing the problem and what we have to do to solve it. And it's really not a complicated situation. We need to build new generation capacity quickly, and we need to build up sufficient generation capacity reserve to enable us to decommission old, non-performing, non-compliant, dirty, thirsty, unreliable, unpredictable, intermittent plant and replace it with reliable, progressively, not all at once, progressively replace it with reliable, new, clean technologies that can see us through to the future, and we need to build enough of that to give us a generation capacity reserve margin so that we can do the maintenance on the old plant. It's not a complex matter.
Well, let's hope that, you know, something that's come out of COP26 moves us in that direction away from coal. We're seeing things that are happening with our neighbors, too. I mean, this $4.9 billion green deal that went on in Namibia, the hydrogen deal, something like that. Are you in support of that generally?
Look, if one looks to the future, and Namibia seems to be looking to the future better than South Africa, but if we look to the future, we have to understand that the fossil fuel-based economy that we live in is going to change. The world is facing an existential threat that requires a rapid decarbonization over, not immediately, but over a period of some decades. And we have to make a start today. And we have to do this year by year. And if you were to look 50 years to the future, as far-sighted leaders should be doing, we need to understand that the hydrogen economy is going to be that which replaces the fossil fuel powered economy. So we need to start putting our minds to green hydrogen going forward. And if it happens, like Namibia, South Africa has exceptional resources of low-cost land that is available, coupled with excellent wind and solar resources. And this is what is needed to have a competitive advantage in the emerging green hydrogen market of the future. So we need to understand our competitive advantage and move progressively, step by step, with the right policies and actions in order to build South Africa's future energy. And if we don't start now, we will be left behind.
We certainly agree. I mean, especially coming from our perspective as 5FM, as the youth radio station in the country, I mean, this is going to become our world, and it's certainly the one that we want to live in. And so I appreciate your analysis, and I appreciate what you've been doing in speaking out publicly. I think it makes a difference, and I think that it's a crucial one. I think we need to get educated about what these changes are. We need to understand the road that we're on if they don't move, so that we can put pressure in the right place. I know that Derate is going to be speaking now at 4, and I know you're going to be listening to that very keenly. As a parting shot, quickly, you know, having said what you've said, especially understanding that quick fixes, top changing solutions, that's not going to do anything differently. There is this public pressure that's there now. He's obviously in a complex situation. What do you think is going to be beneficial for him to say at 4 o'clock?
Yeah, it's a very difficult situation to be in, and my view is that he's only been there 20 months, and he's faced with a lot of issues that have to be dealt with all at once, from corruption through to a financial debt situation that is unsustainable, through to a environmental situation. I mean, Eskom's power stations are performing very poorly environmentally, and most of them operate outside of the law. And operationally, you know, the plant is old and needs to be progressively replaced. So he's got all these problems. Look, the political pressure on him is going to become truly enormous by politicians who really are the ones that whose jobs should be on the line. But be that as it may, when you're a leader, sometimes you have to take accountability for the sins of others. To manage this thing and to ensure that you retain political support is going to be absolutely critical. Not only to retain political support, but to retain the support of the people at Eskom, the workforce, the management, the executives. Without their support, one man can do nothing. So it's really important, I think, for him to inspire the organization, to give it a future vision that people can fall behind and understand the current situation being very difficult, but we need to do the right thing for a long time to overcome the problems of the past.
Well said, Chris Yellen, energy analyst, consultant, electrical engineering, public